In the bleak midwinter, by the loud, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of J.K. Rowling. Chapter 44. Broadcasting out of the WWN's Diagon Alley Studios, it's the Daily Entrails, brought to you by Sleek Easy's Hair Potion. It's always easy to be sleek easy. And now, Amanita Bainbury.
Welcome to the Daily Entrails, all the news you need to know. This is your host, Amanita Bainbury, here today with Ignis McKinnon, head of the Werewolf Capture Unit. Today we'll talk about the unit's new direction. Happy to be here. Since you've taken on this job, there have been no werewolf attacks whatsoever. What's your secret? Funny you should call it a secret. I apologize to your listeners, but I'm not at liberty to describe all the changes I've made at the unit. Secrecy is key to our new, more effective methods. We don't want the dangerous werewolves to know what we're doing. Your new methods certainly are effective. Thank you for ensuring that April and May's full moons were completely uneventful. I can't take all the credit for that. I am, of course, extremely grateful to the RCW for sending all those international statute keepers to handle the Oxford attack. They did a great job, killing so many of the dangerous werewolves. I suspect we have few, if any, left.
Are you saying werewolves might be extinct in this country?
No, not at all. I'm speaking only about the dangerous werewolves, the ones who attack humans. The majority of werewolves have always been law-abiding folk and never attack anyone. As I've said all along, werewolves are just people, and there are good people and bad people. Those attacks must have been orchestrated by a bad person who was also a werewolf. You might even call him a werewolf Dark Lord. Now, the previous administration of the Werewolf Capture Unit did a frankly terrible job at fighting that Dark Lord. PUC squandered the department's resources, wasting wizard power capturing ordinary, peaceful werewolves simply going about their business during the harmless phases of the moon. This task was both easy and pointless. Many of the agents added to the payroll by my predecessor seem to have been hired for their connections rather than their skills, so they will not be missed. Their positions were sinecures rather than actual jobs, so I eliminated them. This freed up much of the budget to hire professionals with actual relevant skills. For example, because of the serious risk posed to the statute of secrecy by werewolf attacks on Muggles, we need to be proactive in preventing such attacks. In particular, I needed to hire an expert in Muggles, and I found a great one, a Muggleborn who really knows how to be unobtrusive in the Muggle world, and can teach this skill to others. He has designed new uniforms for our field agents. Some Muggles see them as a fellow Tapper Muggle called Dog Catchers. He trains them to blend into Muggle areas, and even speak with Muggles about any suspicious signs of animal activity they may have seen. I must say, Muggleborns are an absolutely essential part of any organization concerned with preserving the Statute of Secrecy, since they have the best understanding of what we're preserving secrets from.
The Statute of Secrecy is important, of course, but what are you doing to protect the lives of witches and wizards?
The most important thing we do is patrol populated areas with portable dark creature detectors, the afternoon or evening before the full moon. Now, any peaceful, law-abiding werewolves are busy securing themselves in basements or the like at this time, so there's no risk of my agents getting sidetracked targeting the wrong werewolves. I want to get the message out to any peaceful werewolves who may be listening.
I beg your pardon.
What?
Are you implying that werewolves might be listening to my show right now?
I'm not implying it, I'm stating it as a fact. This is one of the most popular wireless shows in Wizarding Britain. Of course werewolves listen to it like anyone else. The real Lou Gero might be listening right now.
Thank you for joining me today, Mr. McKinnon. I'd like to thank the sponsor of today's show, Sleek Easy's Hair Potion, guaranteed to tame even the wildest...
Saturday the 22nd of June was warm, but Inchfor Hall was too massive to be swayed by mere seasonal variation in temperature. Its ballroom would not begin to warm until autumn, and its wine cellar would not shift a degree for anything less than a significant change in the Earth's orbit. Tessie did not seem to feel the chill, despite the light, summery wedding gown that bared her fair arms and legs to the air. Warmth radiated from her smiling face, particularly when she looked at Algy, which was often. Algy looked similarly delighted, embracing and kissing his bride every few moments, which Tom had to admit was justifiable in the circumstances. The wedding formalities were quickly dispensed with, and the main event, the reception, began. Lord Bootle Flournoy had spared no expense marrying off his stepdaughter. The ballroom of Inchfor Manor hosted a jazz band, perhaps shocking to the ancient timbers of the building, which were no doubt more accustomed to resonating with the staid music of centuries past. The wedding guests strolled through the garden, danced, drank, nibbled canapes, and chatted, per their preferences, as the happy couple mingled. Lady Bootle Flournoy flagged Tom down as he searched for water amid the desert of dry champagne.
"Tom, I'd like to introduce you to my husband, Archibald Bootle Flournoy, Earl of Inchfa. Archie, this is my friend Tom Riddle."
"I'm delighted to meet you," said Tom, shaking the muggle's thick hand.
"Likewise," said Lord Bootle Flournoy, with the air of one who had shaken enough hands today for the novelty to wear off.
"You know, Archie, it was Tom who first suggested I go to the Café de Paris,"
said Lady Bootle Flournoy.
"So our first meeting was thanks to him."
Lord Bootle Flournoy looked at Tom with more interest.
"Then I'm in your debt, sir. My only complaint is that you kept her hidden for so long. A more charming, sensible girl I never wished to meet. Not one of your silly, brainless chits who don't know the difference between lobster Newburgh and canvas-back duck. And you prefer sweet champagne to dry. No, sir! Not one of your mincing, affected kind who pretend they never touch anything except a spoonful of cold consommé. No, sir. Good, healthy appetite. Enjoys her food, and knows why she's enjoying it. I give you my word, my boy, until I met her I didn't know a woman existed who could talk so damned sensibly about a Bavaroise au rhum."
"Oh, Archie,"
giggled the blushing Lady Bootle Flournoy.
"And I hear you're also the one who introduced my daughter to Algy," continued Lord Bootle Flournoy. "Quite the introducer you are. I'm thankful for that as well. I'm glad to marry my daughter off to someone, and of such a good family, too. A girl like that I'm surprised anyone would marry."
"A girl like that?" Tom repeated, more confused than offended, although offense was certainly there. "That's my friend you're talking about."
"Oh, she's a perfectly sweet girl,"
Lord Bootle Flournoy backtracked.
"Wonderful personality. So considerate of her mother and me. I have no complaint there. But one must admit that she's awfully skinny. Such a pity she didn't inherit her mother's figure. I'm glad she found a husband who appreciates her virtues."
Tom couldn't think of a response to this, so he looked at Tessie, dancing with Algy. At this very moment, Algy was appreciating Tessie's virtues in a way that was not usually associated with the word virtue, which risked marking certain parts of Tessie's short wedding dress with Algy's perspiration handprints. Perhaps this was a new dance move. Tom couldn't keep up with every muggle fad. "This is a beautiful wedding," he said instead. "Do you know where I might find some water? Your champagne supply is ample, but Mueller recommends water as the most refreshing beverage after exertion such as dancing."
"Oh, yes. Algy mentioned that his best man has strange tastes in drink."
The Earl directed Tom to a table hidden out of the way, so Tom thanked him, bade him and his lady adieu, and finally got some water. He should tell Hermione about this resource, but he'd have to find her first. She must have finished patrolling the perimeter by now, testing the stability of her protective runes. She'd promised to dance with him, and surely she didn't want her study of that subject to go to waste. Instead, he met Algy, sliding on his dance shoes across the polished wood floor to the hidden table, where he partook of water as enthusiastically as he did everything.
"Tom, you're the absolute best old man, best friend a man could hope for. What? You introduced me to Tessie, and to the concept of drinking water. You know, I've found that if I drink at least as much water as champagne alternating like, I can dance for twice as long about, all thanks to you."
"You're very welcome," said Tom. "Although I can't take credit for the concept of drinking water. Some other great thinker before me came up with the idea. I'm just passing it along."
"You're being modest," said Algy. "Hello."
Hermione reached between them to take a glass of water. "Congratulations," she told Algy. "May you and Tessie live long lives together."
"Thanks."
Algy attempted to focus his eyes on Hermione.
"I'm sorry, have we—"
"This is Hermione Granger," explained Tom. "My date for today. I mentioned her before. She's been living with us in the Riddle house."
"Oh."
Algy pulled his gaze away from Hermione to look at Tom confusedly.
"This is your Australian April heiress."
"Yes."
"But she's beautiful."
"Why are you noticing another woman on your wedding day?"
"I'm married, not blind, but you said—"
"Interrupt."
"Oh, there's Ignis,"
said Hermione, looking happily and pointing away from them.
"I've never seen him in a morning suit. He does clean up well, doesn't he?"
She vanished into the crowd.
I mean, a man is no Tessie, of course, said Algy, but your descriptive powers seem lacking in this instance. There's no need for you to be embarrassed to have a girl like that in your arm. Oh, Nigel, thank you for coming. You should try this novel drink we have here, water. Tom introduced me to it. Algy pursued Nigel through the crowd and disappeared. Tom set off in search of another dance partner. But all the likely prospects were gathering at one side of the room. Ah, they hoped to catch the bouquet there. Tessie was standing on a table, having fun tantalizing the crowd, pretending to throw, then pulling back at the last instant. Tom reduced his risk of being trampled by high heels by retreating to the safety of the opposite end of the ballroom, which was currently sparsely populated, although not completely empty. The parents of the bride and groom had invited all the important families, so of course she was here. Baronet Threepwarple was engaged in a hushed argument with Cecilia. Tom didn't want to be seen as spying, but at the same time felt Cecilia's distress as if it were his own and wished for some way to relieve it. He knew of the conflicts she had with her father. Tom stepped close enough to hear Cecilia firmly whisper,
I'm not going to fight my fellow women over a stupid bouquet of all the flowers I want at home.
It's not about the flowers, said her father, as if Cecilia were an idiot, which infuriated Tom vicariously.
The tradition is the lucky girl to grab the bridal bouquet might be the next one.
Trying to catch the bridal bouquet is optional, interrupted Tom. Cecilia and her father stared at him. Tom took care to address only Baronet Threepwarple, for he knew that Cecilia did not wish to converse with him. Forgive my interruption, but as best man I have a responsibility to help this wedding run smoothly, which includes ensuring that the crowd competing for the bridal bouquet is not excessively large. Many of the more refined young ladies here want to avoid the indignity of scrambling for the bouquet, so your daughter is not distinguishing herself by declining to participate. In fact, one might even say that yielding the bouquet to others is more gentle and gracious, therefore more appealing to prospective husbands than the sort of desperate, ambitious grasping exhibited by some of these young women. The baronet considered that.
I see your point, he turned to Cecilia. The squire's son talks sense sometimes. Perhaps he's not completely mad.
Father, complained Cecilia.
It's all right. Not going to make you join that mob, said Baronet Threepwarple.
Thank you, said Cecilia quietly.
Go mingle at least, ordered the baronet.
I could introduce your daughter to some friends, Tom offered.
Good idea, said Baronet Threepwarple. Go on, Cecilia. Maybe you'll finally meet someone who wants to marry a suffragist.
And Tom felt Cecilia's pain with his whole being. Tom finally addressed Cecilia.
I see a friend over there. May I introduce you?
She looked back and forth at Tom and her father a few times. Fine, she finally conceded and charged off, Tom following. Once they were a safe distance from the baronet, Tom said,
If you wanted that bouquet, you'd have it in an instant.
You'd trample all those poor girls to fetch it for me?
That would be completely unnecessary, and I'd trust you to take it under your own power. The fact that you haven't done so is proof that you don't want it. I've learned my lesson. I'll never inflict unwanted flowers on you again.
Cecilia looked at him askance for a moment.
Thank you, she concluded.
I'm sorry to see that your father is trying to marry you off. It's terribly Victorian of him.
It's really none of your business.
Of course, but for what it's worth, which is nothing, I think you're perfect as you are. You don't need a man to be complete. A woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle.
Tom prided himself on his dry delivery, but in this case it was met with an equally dry reception. Cecilia stopped dead and looked at him worriedly.
Anyway, I did promise your father I'd introduce you to friends, and I see one now. Have you met Lulu Legrand?
He led Cecilia to Lulu, who was taking advantage of the distraction to fill her plate with canapes, unobstructed by crowds.
Cecilia, this is the maid of honour, my friend Lulu Legrand. She's a chorus girl in West End shows. Lulu, this is Cecilia Threepwarple, the suffragist.
Pleased to meet you, said Lulu, shaking Cecilia's hand.
Likewise, said Cecilia. She glanced nervously at Tom, then addressed Lulu. Do you know why Tom has been talking about fish and bicycles?
Lulu looked at Cecilia. Then Tom for an explanation.
I noted that not all the unmarried women here were clamoring for the bridal bouquet or the husband who's presumably part of the set, and observed that a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, said Tom.
Lulu laughed raucously.
That's a good one. You're funnier than a Joe Martin picture. Nancy, come over here. You don't want to miss one of Tom's jokes.
It was a joke,
asked Cecilia. Yes, said Tom. Nancy joined them, her plate heavily laden.
What's Tom up to now?
Tom did introductions again, introducing Nancy as bridesmaid. Lulu poked Tom playfully and said,
Dear joke again.
So he repeated himself, tired of it already. He had no idea how these two could tolerate performing the same show every night for weeks. Nancy laughed.
I remember that one the next time a man gets too full of himself. I swear, sometimes men think they're indispensable, and they're really not. Present company accepted, of course.
Tom shook his head. I've proven myself dispensable already, so there's no need to make an exception for me. Lulu and Nancy took this as a call for compliments, or at least reassurance, for they argued this point with him.
Now then, we love having you along for our nights in the town, insisted Lulu. You tell the best jokes, added Nancy. And occasionally pay the bill, when Algie isn't quick enough to grab it, said Lulu. How do you two know Tom? Asked Cecilia. Algie introduced us, said Nancy. And Tom introduced Algie and us to Tessie, said Lulu. So this wedding is sort of thanks to him. Tessie's such a sweetheart, said Nancy. Algie too, added Lulu. They're perfect for each other. I'm so happy for them, said Nancy. Hope they still have Tom to go out with us. After the honeymoon, of course, said Lulu. I'm sure they will. It's wonderful going out with them now that they don't have to pretend they're not in love, said Nancy, who was more tolerant of public displays of affection than some.
Pretend, repeated Cecilia. Lulu loaded up with a deep breath to power her broadcast of gossip.
Algie's father is a real stick in the mud, insisting that Algie had to marry some girl with a noble title, which Tessie didn't have until her mother married Lord Bootle Flannoy. She started off as just an ordinary girl like us. Imagine Algie's father trying to shackle him to one of those inbred nobles.
They all look like they've got something wrong with them, don't they? Added Nancy.
Now, Nancy, be polite, said Lulu. After all, Algie has a noble title, and there's nothing wrong with him.
Well, said Nancy. The clam down jaw is sort of the opposite of the Habsburg jaw.
What, you'd ever marry a Habsburg, so the jaws cancel out? Asked Lulu.
Maybe you should breed fancy pigeons. They're cheaper than nobles. You could keep them on the roof of the boarding house.
Tom cleared his throat. I didn't mention this during introductions, as it didn't seem important, but Miss Threepwomple is the daughter of Baronet Threepwomple, and as you see, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, despite her noble ancestry.
Lulu and Nancy looked Cecilia up and down.
Oh, Lulu said eventually. Sorry, Tom's right. I wouldn't have known you were one of them if he hadn't told me.
You're pretty enough to be a chorus girl, added Nancy. At Cecilia's affronted look, she added,
or a headliner even.
Cecilia cleared her throat.
Anyway, I understand that you two have been spending a great deal of time with Tom.
Yeah, for over 2 years now, said Nancy.
Have you noticed him acting odd?
Lulu and Nancy looked at each other.
Odd, repeated Nancy.
He drinks less than most blokes, offered Lulu.
And doesn't smoke. It's this Mueller system he's into. And he never gets fresh, even in close dances, added Nancy. That's unusual.
He's a very good dancer, contributed Lulu.
Very considerate of his partner. Never steps on my feet.
Cecilia wasn't satisfied.
Does he say things that don't make sense?
Lulu and Nancy looked at each other again.
No,
Lulu said. Nancy shook her head in confirmation.
Has he said anything about witches?
Pressed Cecilia.
Oh, yeah,
said Nancy, glad to have something to satisfy her questioner.
You see, Tessie was reading this novel about witches, and Tom read it too, and they talked about it sometimes. And they got a copy as a present for Algie, and he loved it, even though he's not a big reader.
A novel? Asked Cecilia, who was certainly aware of novels, even if she had more important things to do than read them.
Uh-huh,
said Lulu.
I couldn't find it in shops, but Algie loaned us his copy. It's a really fun book. Lots of adventure. It's called Lugara, but good luck finding it.
So Tom knows it's just a novel, not real? Asked Cecilia.
Yeah?
Said Nancy. He said it's nice to take a break from worrying about real problems. He's certainly got enough real problems to deserve a break now and then.
Have you noticed Tom saying things that aren't true? Asked Cecilia.
What? Exclaimed Lulu indignantly.
Tom's our friend, said Nancy, and a perfectly straight-dealing bloke.
She positioned herself between Tom and Cecilia as if to protect him from her.
Why'd you get off calling him a liar?
No. Cecilia rushed to correct this miscommunication.
I'm not talking about lies. I mean, Tom suffers from delusions. He's mentally ill. He needs help, but everyone's just ignoring the problem. He's a danger to himself and maybe even to others if he's allowed to go out unsupervised like this.
After a bit of silence, Lulu, followed closely by Nancy, burst into laughter.
What a load of...
Lulu wiped her eyes.
That's got to be the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And I've heard some doozies. I spent a lot of time with Tom, not just going out in the town, but also working together to help organise his wedding, arranging everything just so, and he's got to be one of the most reliable, responsible people I know. He's really got it together. Which is extra amazing considering all the troubles he's had. But
poor Cecilia tried again.
Has he said that magic is real? Has he said that witches exist? What? No. That's ridiculous.
Lulu and Nancy turns to each other, then Tom, not knowing how to deal with Cecilia. Tom laughed, joy welling in his heart, for in this pointed line of questioning was proof that Cecilia, despite her claims, still cared about him. She had just spent several minutes listening to testimony that he was a perfectly sane and good man. He could win her back, if only he turned himself into the man she wanted him to be.
Of course not, witches don't exist.
Tom felt a tap on his shoulder and turned to see Hermione.
Tom, I need you.
A roar at the other end of the ballroom implied that Tessie had finally yielded her bouquet to some lucky girl. A crowd of disappointed girls set out onto the dance floor armed with nothing but their own charms.
I'm at your service, said Tom. What can I do for you?
Tell Ignis it's okay for him to dance with me.
Hermione stepped aside to reveal Ignis, looking like he'd rather be anywhere else, a feral werewolf pack, for instance. Tom wondered which of Ignis's potential objections dominated. Hermione was a Muggleborn, but Ignis had come remarkably far in his acceptance of Muggleborns, so that was an unlikely obstacle at this point. Hermione was, however, Tom's date, so perhaps that was the issue. Ignis, being unfamiliar with Muggle dance customs, might not realize that Hermione's status as Tom's date did not give Tom exclusive rights to be Hermione's dance partner for the whole event. Out of respect to Tom, Ignis was being overly cautious about dancing with Hermione. Of course, there was also Ignis's likely objection that he didn't know Muggle dances and didn't want to embarrass himself by revealing his ignorance on the dance floor. Tom would find and destroy Ignis's objection.
Why don't you want to dance with Hermione?
Well, I mean, I don't know these dances and...
Ignis was a surprisingly bad liar for the werewolf department head of the werewolf capture unit. This response eliminated one of the possibilities. Ignis's lack of knowledge of these dances wasn't the problem.
That's okay, I'll teach you, volunteered Lulu, stepping forward.
She stuck out her hand to shake.
Lulu Legrand, maid of honor. So it's my job to make sure everything at this wedding works out, including you having a good time on the dance floor. Pleased to meet you.
Ignis looked at her hand, clearly not in a kissable position.
This is my friend, Ignis McKinnon, said Tom, and my other friend, Hermione Granger. Ignis, you're fortunate to receive this offer from Lulu. She's a professional dancer.
And what do you do?
Asked Lulu.
I'm a dog catcher.
Ignis was suddenly startled by Tessie coming up behind him and engulfing him in a hug.
Ignis, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for coming. This means a lot to me.
Thank you for inviting me, said Ignis.
How do you know Ignis?
Lulu asked Tessie.
Ignis and I went to school together, said Tessie. We've been friends since we were 11.
Oh,
exclaimed Nancy. She explained her surprise to Cecilia, still gamely trying to include her in the conversation.
We've hardly met any of Tessie's old friends before, just Tom and her mum and her brother one time, and he isn't even here today.
Everyone else at this wedding is from Algie's side or Tessie's new stepfamily, observed Lulu. So I'm glad at least one of her old friends could make it.
Ignis is better than a brother to me, said Tessie.
Ignis blushed and looked down.
I'm just here for the free food.
Tessie laughed.
I know you don't mean that. You have no need to scrounge for food, not with your salary.
Dog catching pays well, then?
Asked Lulu.
Ignis is no ordinary dog catcher, said Tessie. You know those dogs that attacked Islington and Little Hangleton and Oxford? Ignis is the head of the whole department that specializes in killing really ferocious dogs like that.
Oh, said Lulu.
You mean werewolves?
Tessie giggled nervously.
No, werewolves aren't real.
Lulu rolled her eyes and addressed Ignis.
They're werewolves, right?
Ignis took a deep breath.
The official story is that they're vicious dogs bred for an illegal dog fighting ring. That's all I'll say on the matter.
Right, said Lulu with a wink.
Hunting werewolves sounds dangerous, admired Nancy.
Dogs, corrected Ignis, and I actually don't do much field work myself these days. As head of the department, I'm more of an administrator. It's dull, frankly. I'd rather be out in the field.
Why the gloves?
Lulu asked Ignis.
You don't have to be as formal as that for a June wedding.
Nancy gasped.
Is it because you have scars from your dangerous dog-catching work, and you want to spare us the disturbing sight?
Ignis's silence was all the confirmation they needed.
Interesting hairstyle, said Lulu,
running her fingers through Ignis's auburn locks.
Longer than mine, doesn't it get hot?
Ignis stood frozen.
Looks great, though, said Nancy, doesn't it?
She asked Cecilia, still charitably trying to include her in the conversation.
Even Tom's friends are mad,
muttered Cecilia as she walked away.
It was a nice full moon, right?
Asked Nancy.
So you'll have to leave soon.
Well, yes, said Ignis. Sorry to leave early, but... Tessie clutched his hand.
I completely understand. You're so brave. I know you'll be busy with work tonight. Thank you for keeping us safe. Got time for a dance before you go?
Asked Lulu.
Sorry, I don't know how to dance,
said Ignis.
Lulu can teach you, Tessie assured him. She's a great dancer. Nancy, too. Or I could,
said Hermione.
Yes, said Tom. First by demonstration, since she'll be dancing with me. Now watch closely.
He took Hermione's hand and led her to the dance floor.
They set a fine example, if Tom thought so himself.
Hermione was so light on her feet she needed no broom to fly. When Tom led Hermione back to Ignis, she was smiling, but Ignis looked troubled, no doubt envious of Tom's dance skill.
Like that, said Hermione. You see, it's fun.
She let go of Tom and took Ignis's hand. Now come on. Ignis wasn't convinced.
It seems a bit... I mean, with the touching and everything. It's fine, said Hermione. It's a game, like dueling, anticipating your opponent's moves. I think you'd be good at it if you tried. Put your right hand on my back here, while I put my left hand on your shoulder. We held our hands like so. Now each couple has a leader and a follower. I'm going to start as leader, telling you where to go, and then you'll take a turn leading, all right?
Here we go. First, I'm going to shift your weight from foot to foot, like so, see? Just like if you were to faint left and then cast right.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
We can't really start dancing until the music starts, of course.
What's the music for?
Hermione thought, not wanting to be answerless in her new status as dance teacher.
It's traditional.
Nancy and Lulu looked at each other.
Now, just like at the Halloween attack, we'd advance together.
Hermione and Ignis drifted into the crowd on the dance floor, distinguishable even at a distance by their mutual lack of musicality, yet ample supply of grace.
I see that werewolf hunting doesn't require a sense of rhythm, said Nancy. I thought she was a better dancer than that.
Now I see it was all Tom.
Those two are perfect for each other,
said Lulu, watching Hermione and Ignis.
For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 and fanfiction.net pages of The Loud. The music is Shy by the New Orleans Trio. For more stories that I have recorded, visit my website at samgabrielvo.com. There you can find a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.